This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Exhausted families continue to arrive in Uganda this week as the total number of South Sudanese refugees in the country hit the 1 million mark. Armed rebels kept a close watch on the South Sudanese side of the border as the people cross.
That's Halima Tumani reporting from Kampala. Details next. Also, Congolese militia members are being blamed for the deaths of two UN investigators in the DRC. And the new multinational force to fight terrorism in Africa's Sahel region is now operational. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Exhausted family.
Our top story, Uganda is home to 1 million South Sudanese refugees. Aid agencies say the milestone number reached this week is a call to action for the international community to not only up donor support, but also renew efforts to end the conflict. Halima Tumani has the story from Kampala, with reporting in northern Uganda by Jason Patinkin.
Exhausted families continue to arrive in Uganda this week as the total number of South Sudanese refugees in the country hit the 1 million mark. Armed rebels kept a close watch on the South Sudanese side of the border as the people cross. The new arrivals braved heavy rains, cold nights, and the scorching sun to find safety. Once on the Ugandan side, Lesi Iya and her family stopped to rest. She says they stayed for 3 weeks under trees with only saucepans, plates and some cups for water. She says they need to be taken to a place to find peace and leave what happened behind. South Sudan's civil war began in December 2013, but aid agencies say there has been increasing violence. A power-sharing deal fell apart in July of last year. Civilians have borne the brunt of the conflict. According to the International Committee of the Red Cross, one in three of South Sudan's 12 million residents has been displaced, while one in two is severely hungry and in need of food assistance. Amnesty International has called the 1 million mark a wake-up call for the international community, which it says must take measures to stop violence and other abuses against civilians in South Sudan. The United Nations says since July 2016, Uganda has been receiving on average 1,800 South Sudanese refugees a day, 85% women and children. UNHCR Uganda spokesperson Charlie Yangsley says a 14-year-old girl named Tabu Sande is a symbolic 1 millionth South Sudanese refugee to arrive.
She was forced to flee after armed groups attacked her village in the middle of the night. Together with her aunts, she spent weeks traveling through the bush, being forced to eat nothing but water lilies and drinking water from dirty streams in order to arrive safely in Uganda.
Three quarters of the South Sudanese refugees in Uganda have arrived in the past year, overwhelming the country's resources, says the International Rescue Committee, IRRC. IRRC Country Director in Uganda, Angela Rugambwa, says it is the world's fastest growing refugee crisis.
There is not a slowdown in terms of refugees crossing over to Uganda. It's only been on increase. And there hasn't been any corresponding means in terms of international aid that is coming in to cater for the 1 million South Sudanese refugees.
Yangsley says of the $674 million needed for this year, UNHCR has received only 21%.
Many refugees have seen their food rations cut in half. We see health clinics with insufficient doctors, drugs and healthcare workers. Let's be clear, this is a real children's crisis. It's children that are being forced to flee through the bush, often in the middle of the night, for days if not weeks on end. So there's a desperate need for a surge of solidarity with Uganda in order to ensure that these refugees are able to live in safety and in dignity.
Yegsley says a resolution to the conflict in South Sudan appears nowhere in sight.
So it's key that the international community comes forward to use the political influence they have over the leadership in South Sudan to bring the warring factions together to the table in dialogue so that we can bring an end to the bloodshed.
For now, all the 1 million South Sudanese refugees in Uganda can do is wait. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
While South Sudanese continue to cross the border into Uganda, many people around the world have been forced out of their homes and are on the move. The Internal Displacement Monitoring Center says so far this year, 9 million people globally have been displaced. Bina Desai is head of policy and research from Geneva. She spoke to VOA's Jody Kapua about the new estimates of displaced people.
These are people who have been forced out of their homes very often at very short notice, just basically grabbing their family and maybe a few possessions to move somewhere where they consider it to be safer, where they consider to be able to actually have a livelihood and income and send their children to school, and that within the borders of their country. So they're not actually refugees, they do not cross borders, and therefore they never achieve the legal status and therefore also often not the international support that they would need upon arrival. So in terms of the total numbers, we have published our in a provisional estimates because it's the mid-year figures of 2017 numbers from January to June 2017, and we already recorded 9 million total new displacements. 4.6 million are in the context of conflict. And that's a very concerning number because it's already two-thirds of the total of new displacements we recorded for 2016 overall.
Can you tell us some of the countries that have been hardest hit by displacement?
So particularly in regions where we do not think that the conflict and situation and levels of violence are going to cease anytime soon. So this is, for example, the Democratic Republic of Congo with almost 1 million new displacements in the last 6 months. So overall, 6 out of the 10 of the top 10 countries are in sub-Saharan Africa, so also Ethiopia, Central African Republic, South Sudan, and the Gambia, as well as Nigeria. So really concerning trends across the region, but as well as, of course, the Middle East, with Iraq and Syria having significant numbers.
Now, the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center also looks at displacement in regards to natural disasters.
New displacements at a significant level in the context of disasters. It's 4.5 million new displacements in the last 6 months, which is, in a sense, compared to the usual kind of annual numbers, comparably low, but we need to consider that the monsoon season in Asia is still really going to hit in full force, as well as hurricane and cyclone seasons in the Latin America and Caribbean and in Asia, again, are still upcoming. So the numbers are very likely to increase exponentially. And what this tells us is that ultimately not nearly enough is done to address the underlying drivers of displacement and of displacement risk.
What, in your view, needs to be done?
So there's a number of issues around internal displacement in particular, but across the whole spectrum of displacement, be it forced migration, more broadly speaking, refugees, etc. It's a series of, in a sense, triggers, the immediate triggers that we can see, like violence or conflict or a disaster. But moreover, it's also underlying drivers, demographic changes, social, political, economic developments over time and lack of investment therein that drive these displacements. And even underlying that, really structural factors in the regions. And that is where we feel, first of all, much more investment has to be made to really understand those different layers that ultimately come together to then push people when there is a crisis happening, and to understand much more also in terms of the numbers, but in terms of the patterns in particular, what are those specific circumstances which people move? Because we do have situations where people would be expected to move but do not, potentially because they're unable to, because really poverty, lack of documentation, etc., or links to very tentative livelihoods like their fields for agriculture, etc., make it impossible for them to leave.
Can you compare these figures to what has happened in the past? Is there anything comparable short of World War II?
Yes, there's a lot of talk in general, the refugee crisis and displacement crisis today being, you know, the largest since World War II. The sad thing that we do see is that year in, year out, we have very, very high levels of new displacement across the world. It's more than 50 countries in the context of a conflict. It's more than 100 countries in the context of disasters. And it's not something entirely new, let's put it that way. The scale is increasing, but at the same time, if we look at the relative risks or in relation to population size, it's not necessarily increasing. But the problem is it's not decreasing, and new displacements are increasing. So the overall numbers cannot go down. That is a critical issue because the humanitarian system is trying to address the needs of those concerned, but is overly stretched to do so more and more, and is not able to really, through that approach, of course, also to address these actual drivers that I described earlier.
That's Bina Desai, head of policy and research from Geneva. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. The deaths of two UN investigators in the DRC last March are being blamed on Congolese militia members. That's what an inquiry has found regarding the murder of Michael Sharp and Zaid Ketlen. They were killed while investigating violence and mass graves in Kasai province. AFP reports, however, that further investigation will be required to fully ascertain the identity of those responsible. The inquiry found there was reasonable likelihood that the killings were committed after consultation with other local tribal actors. Sharp and Ketlen disappeared on March 12th. Their bodies were found 16 days later. The new multinational force to fight terrorism in Africa's Sahel region is now operational. However, the G5 force still faces funding challenges. The G5 force is made up of troops from Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali, Mauritania, and Niger. The UN approved its creation about 2 months ago. UN Assistant Secretary General for Peacekeeping Operations, El-Ghassam Wayne, addressed the General Assembly yesterday about the need for the G5 force.
The cross-border dimension of the terrorist threat in the Sahel region, as well as the serious challenges posed by transnational organized crime and its links with terrorism, continue to pose a serious threat to stability, prosperity, and growth in the Sahel region. In Mali, attacks by violent extremist groups on national security forces, international forces, and MINUSMA remain a sad reality and hamper the implementation of the peace agreement, one of the key elements for the stabilization of the region. Their activities know no borders, and time and again, we have seen vicious attacks also in neighboring countries and in the broader region. This past weekend was marked by the heinous attacks in Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso, and on MINUSMA camps in Douenza and Timbuktu.
Wayne said the civilian population has borne the brunt of the violence and have few social services to rely on for support. He described how Mali has been affected by the presence of militant groups.
In Mali, the number of state officials present in the northern part of the country has decreased by 10% compared to last year. Persistent threat by extremist groups targeting school teachers, students, and parents resulted in the closure of 178 schools. This erosion of state authority provides a fertile breeding ground for violent extremism and terrorism. A countless number of young people in the Sahel facing job insecurity and even chronic poverty could all too easily fall prey to these groups. The situation is dire, and time to identify and implement solutions is unfortunately running out.
He says, however, dealing with the root causes of instability in the Sahel requires going beyond military action. He says good governance, chronic poverty, unemployment, climate change, and development must also be addressed. The UN official says the budget for the first year of the G5 force is nearly $500 million.
While generating pledges and contributions to meet the requirements of the joint force will be critical, the setting up of transparent, coordinated, and effective funding will be equally as important. We understand that in terms of what was pledged by the European Union, efforts in this respect are already underway, I also urge the G5 Sahel member states to swiftly make good of these pledges so that they can be utilized for the further operationalization of the joint force.
That was UN Assistant Secretary General for Peacekeeping Operations, El-Gassim Wayne. The UN says the joint force is scheduled to conduct its first coordinated operations in October along Mali's borders with Nigeria and Burkina Faso. It's expected to have greater capacity in early 2018. A Muslim radical convicted of destroying World Heritage sites in Mali has been ordered to pay more than $3 million in reparations. The Associated Press reports the International Criminal Court handed down the ruling against Ahmed Al-Faqi Al-Mahdi. He's serving 9 years in prison for directing attacks in Timbuktu against 9 mausoleums and a mosque door in 2012. The structures were built in the 15th and 16th centuries and were the tombs of saints. Al-Mahdi expressed remorse for his actions and urged others not to commit similar acts. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Uganda is now home to 1 million South Sudanese refugees. Congolese militia members are being blamed for the deaths of 2 UN investigators in the DRC. And the new multinational force to fight terrorism in Africa's Sahel region is now operational. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. In Freetown, Sierra Leone, rescue workers continue digging through tons of mud and debris following Monday's mudslides that killed at least 300 people. One-third of the dead are children. About 600 people are reported missing. Deputy Health Minister Ziliatu Cooper tells the Associated Press that the government is relocating residents from areas that could be hit with more mudslides. The UN reports that a mass burial has been held for about 150 bodies. Thousands of people lost their homes after heavy rains washed away soil from Mount Sugarloaf. Today, Britain's Queen Elizabeth sent a message to Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma saying, she is deeply saddened by the tragedy. Zimbabwe's First Lady has requested diplomatic immunity for an incident where she allegedly assaulted a young woman in Johannesburg. The incident has sparked public outrage in South Africa and could also complicate the relations between the neighboring countries. VOA's Anita Power looks at the situation from Johannesburg with reporting from Sebastian Mumfu in Harare.
The accusations that Zimbabwe's First Lady Grace Mugabe assaulted and badly hurt a young woman in an upscale Johannesburg hotel this week have grabbed international headlines. The incident has also created a major diplomatic headache for two neighbors who have delicate relations. Zimbabwe and South Africa are major trade partners, but in recent years, instability and economic woes have sent millions of Zimbabweans fleeing across the border. They form a loud and angry diaspora that almost unanimously calls for South Africa to condemn President Robert Mugabe, who has ruled Zimbabwe since 1980. This event has thrown these issues into sharper focus. Here is South African international relations spokesman Clayson Monyela when asked what the government plans to do.
We've been advised not to comment on this thing any further.
His department has the job of deciding whether to grant Grace Mugabe's request for diplomatic immunity, which would spare her from prosecution. The First Lady failed to appear before police Tuesday to give a statement. On Thursday, South African prosecutor Harry Nell, who has been nicknamed the Bulldog, said his organization, Afroforum, would provide legal representation for the alleged victim, 20-year-old Gabriella Engels. He says Mugabe's request for immunity should not be granted, on the grounds that initially she said she was visiting South Africa for medical treatment, and not, as she now says, to attend a regional summit alongside her husband.
It's not automatic. There's lots of prescriptions and things that should be followed before somebody can claim immunity.
Could Grace Mugabe be put on trial? Zimbabwe scholar David Moore of the University of Johannesburg says South Africa's government is in a very sticky position, in part because Mrs. Mugabe has positioned herself to be her aging, ailing husband's successor.
Now, if Grace Mugabe is disgraced through this event in South Africa, you'd have a very unpopular leader of a party, and a very temporary leader, because she's volatile, as we can see. So that would lead to more uncertainty on the borders of South Africa. So South Africa now has to worry about how they handle this situation with Grace Mugabe, how that will affect politics in Zimbabwe.
South African officials say Grace Mugabe is still in the country, but have not given her location. Her husband Robert arrived in the country late Wednesday to attend the summit of the Southern African Development Community. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And a new treaty aimed at limiting exposure to the toxic metal mercury is now in effect. The Minamata Treaty is named after a Japanese fishing village. People there were poisoned by mercury in the 1950s when it was released in industrial wastewater. The so-called Minamata disease caused by mercury attacks the nervous system and results in severe disabilities. At least 3,000 cases of poisoning were officially recorded, along with 1,700 deaths. Children are especially at risk. Mercury poisoning can also strike children working in small-scale gold mines in Ghana, Nigeria, Mali, Tanzania, the Philippines, and the Papua New Guinea. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Patrick Deya, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Van Dyke, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss why ailing African leaders often travel abroad for their medical care. Should this be an acceptable practice? We'll delve into the issue on Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
African music hits. Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.
Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.